Monash in the KSRO kitchen. Good morning.
Good morning.
How are you?
I'm great.
I'm going to get you to wear like a flaming yellow and red and green shirt for spring.
No. No, but you know, I always used to, it became kind of a trademark wore for years. I have this whole collection of Hawaiian shirts, you know, that I used to wear all the time. Maybe I should dig those out again.
Bring those out again.
It was when my son said to me, when he was much younger, then I said, Dad, can you not wear those shirts all the time?
Steve Garner and Chef John Ash in the kitchen. If you want to reach Chef John Ash during the entire hour, you can always call us or email us with a culinary question at 636-1350 or steve@ksro.com. A lively show, as let me be the first to welcome our listeners to our annual Kentucky Derby program. This has been a tradition for 32 years.
Yeah, it's interesting. I was watching, listening to the news about the Kentucky. It's going to be a sloppy track, I guess.
Many times it is. It's been raining off and on. And, of course, the forerunner had to scratch, so it's a wide-open field as far as who's going to be the favorite. Yeah. Well, you had some exciting adventure this past Wednesday night down at the Doubletree Hotel Restaurant in Rohnert Park.
Yeah, it was great. It was the Chefs of Tomorrow gathering. And I think it's been going on now for, I don't know, 15 years or something. And what it is, it's all of the high schools in the area who have culinary programs. And each year they take on the task of making something. This year it was chocolate. And so each had to come up with a savory chocolate, which is not so easy, and a sweet chocolate, which of course is pretty easy because that's how we often think of chocolate, is in sweet preparations and stuff. But it was really great, and the kids are so great. And we judged them. It was quite a interesting group of judges. It was me and Doug Keen, Daniel Keedan of Backyard, Jeffrey Ross, who has he's up in Windsor, and had the most beautiful chocolates. He gave me a little gift bag, which was great. So his chocolates aren't in stores at this point. He just does custom stuff, you know, for wineries.
It's called Bacci?
Bacci, B-A-C-I, yeah. But you can go online, and I think you can order online from him, too. But his stuff is really good. And Shari Sarabi of Bacci Cafe and Wine Bar. They're not related at all, up in Healdsburg. And he's the sweetest man in the world. So
all the high school culinary teams in Sonoma County competed on this theme.
Yes, yeah. And, you know, it's a whole bunch of them. So can I read you the list? So it's Casa Grande High School, El Molino High School, Healdsburg High School, Maria Carrillo High School, Piner High School, Sonoma Valley High School, Windsor High School, Vineyard Academy of Hospitality, which I think is great. And that was the lineup. And all of these have had culinary programs for a long time. And I asked each of the lead instructors for them, I said, well, do a lot of these kids end up in the hospitality? She said, yeah, they do. Some want to go on and be cooks, chefs. Should many of them go on to the hospitality side of things? And so it's a real, it's a really good thing. And it gives them, you know, a sense of purpose. It gives them, if they're interested in it, a place to go. You know, they can cut their chops. That's not quite the right phrase, but, you know, they can develop some skills and go out and get a job. Actually, many of them have jobs while they're still in high school.
And they learn a lot of life skills, too, about language skills and certainly math skills.
All
the things that are required.
Yeah, and how to get along with you know, people and all that, because it's really a team effort, you know, if you're going to put out food. So the winner was, are you ready for this? There were two awards given, the Judges Award, which the judges obviously picked their choice. But then there was also a People's Choice Award that gave participants there, and there must have been 150 people there, gave them a chance to vote for their favorite combination of things. And it was really interesting. I think it's maybe the first time that it's happened. I'm not sure, but I think so, that won high school, won both. You know, which is very atypical. Usually the People's Choice Award is different than the Judges Award, because I think we kind of look for different things. But the winner this year was Casa Grande High School for both of those things. And can I read you what they did? It's wild. You know, it used to be when you'd have competitions like this, they'd make chili or you know, something like that, fried chicken, that kind of stuff. Although there was a fried chicken dish, which you'll go crazy with. And who did that? I have to look this up here. It was the, It was a red velvet fried chicken, which sounds really weird, I know. Oh, it was El Molino did that. It was so delicious. And so it had all of the things you think about with red velvet cake, but not sugar in there. It was really pretty and tasty, and they were frying it to order right there and all that stuff. But the winner, Casa Grande, their sweet thing was a, listen to this, deconstructed chocolate budino tamale. With chocolate, fair trade, guitar chocolate, and show chocolate garnishes on it and all of that stuff. So that was their sweet entry. Their savory entry, which was really delicious, were tacos de puerco, pork tacos, with house-made cilantro, jalapeno crema, house-made queso fresco, they made their own cheese, pickled purple cabbage on handmade tortillas. It was like, wow, you know, that, and it was really fantastic.
And then they had traditional salsas on the side.
Yeah.
Well, congratulations to Casa Grande High School, all the kids involved in that program, and instructor Pamela Gutierrez, along with Chef Larry Willis of the Gables Wine Country.
Yeah.
And he was the professional chef.
Kind of the person there to help them and all that stuff. There was one other one that the judges couldn't agree on, but I really liked it, and it sounds totally weird. Was a white, this was a savory dish, a white chocolate risotto. I liked it.
Yeah.
The other judges were not so crazy about it, but what do they know? You know.
But isn't this great how risk-taking these kids are along with their instructors?
They are, you know, that. And sometimes, you know, we each gave that was Sonoma Valley High who did the white chocolate risotto. The thing is, sometimes they get carried. It's like young chefs also. I mean, we've talked about that in the past. They just get carried away and try to put every ingredient in the kitchen in their dish. And so my comment to them was, well, next time just simplify, and whatever you've come up with, take two things away, you know, and it'll be more focused and all that stuff. Well, but it all was really great.
Well, I'm going to call Chris Carrera from El Molino High School and find out how they did this red velvet fried chicken. I can't get this out of my mind.
I know. When we read about it, we thought, what?
It's pretty wild.
But it was red. Yeah, you know, so it was kind of not what you expect a fried chicken to be.
Well, I'm glad you were able to participate and be a judge this year. And it's one of our favorite events of the entire year. Yeah. And it is the future of a lot of great cooking here in Sonoma County from these young students from the high school. So congratulations to all of them that participated in this year's Wine Country Chefs of Tomorrow, a chocolate obsession, bar none. Back after this, Steve Garner and Chef John Ash in the KSRO Kitchen.
Loose ball to Thompson. Throw ahead, KD.
I have nothing to do with the Knicks.
One step and a right hand dunk for Durant and a timeout.
KSRO.
I want to be an aerospace engineer.
Do you know that the fastest growing careers require STEM skills? And yet women make up only 25% of the STEM workforce.
I want to engineer robots.
I want to be an architect.
Too many girls and young women find themselves discouraged from pursuing science, technology, engineering, and math. Community-wise, Women Investing in STEM Equity is an initiative working to support the aspirations of young women interested in STEM training and careers.
Hi, I'm Jessica Sherry, the CEO at Golden State Lumber in the North Bay. I'd like to see more girls graduate with STEM degrees. At Golden State Lumber, science, technology, engineering, and math are the backbone of our business. We are proud to support this collaboration to provide career opportunities and build a strong workforce in our industry.
Girls in STEM, brought to you by Golden State Lumber in partnership with CTE Foundation's Community Wise. Visit CTESonomaCounty.org and click the STEM Resources page for programs and resources.
the best.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Sonoma County.
That's Dr. Walter Tom's staff thanking you, Sonoma County, for voting Dr. Walter Tom, the Press Democrat, best cosmetic surgeon. Why? He listens. He cares. And he and his team are highly skilled in cosmetic procedures.
Thank you to our wonderful patients who voted us, the Press Democrat, best cosmetic surgeon for a third year in a row. We are humbled by your kindness and will continue to strive to achieve the best cosmetic results possible because patient happiness and their self-confidence is our top priority.
The best. Botox, fillers, lasers, hair transplants, smart lipo, tummy tucks, and breast augmentation. A true professional with skills beyond the ordinary. Cosmetic surgeon, Dr. Walter Tom. Contact his office today for a free consultation or visit his website at drwaltertom.com. drwaltertom.com.
We love you, Sonoma County!
Here's a message from the Marin-Sonoma Mosquito and Vector Control District.
Tick-borne diseases are preventable. Use an effective repellent and wear long pants and long-sleeve shirts when outdoors. Don't forget to check yourself, your family, and pets for ticks after outdoor activities.
Are you having a problem with rodents getting inside your home and don't know what to do? The Marin-Sonoma Mosquito and Vector Control District offers free advice and home inspections.
Go to msmosquito.com for more info.
This is John Greenhut, and if your teeth are stained from coffee, tea, or smoking, Power Swabs is the answer. In 5 minutes, you'll see 2 shades whiter teeth, and in 7 days, 6 shades. Even better, there's no messy strips or trays that you'll have to leave in your mouth for an hour. Just swab your teeth for 5 minutes, and you're done. To try Power Swabs, call 1-800-679-0969. Your bright white smile will have your friends talking about how great you look. Try it risk-free. 1-800-679-0969. That's 1-800-679-0969.
KSRO, AM, FM, and online. Depend on it.
It's the KSRO Good Food Hour. I'm Steve Garner, along with Chef John Ash in the KSRO kitchen. Our next guest needs an introduction because probably a lot of folks have never heard of this woman, but we want to have Shirley O. Corrier on the show today to clear up a misconception, and that is, where in the world did this idea of wet dough biscuits came from? If you're a baker out there, you've probably made lots of biscuits, and I've made lots of biscuits. Mm-hmm. John and I have made biscuits, but until the late 1990s, we had never heard of a wet biscuit dough. And I was wondering about this because we saw a book that said that talked about the wet biscuit dough and that they had kind of not created it but found it in a recipe book and they put it in their book. And I was wondering, you know, what are the obligations, if any, for a cookbook author to credit someone that inspired them with a recipe or technique? Mm-hmm. And I wondered this, and I couldn't come up with an answer, so I sent this question to several cookbook authors in the past week. And I got some replies, and I thought the most eloquent and to-the-point response was from Peter Reinhardt, who has written a number of best-selling cookbooks and is a well-known teacher and author. And Peter wrote, "Hi, Steve. There's no legal requirement to credit another for a recipe idea, but there is an ethical assumption in the writer's community that it is the right thing to do. And to let you, the readers, know the source, if you don't, you kind of lose your credibility. My opinion is that it never hurts to acknowledge the source or inspiration, and it actually enhances one's reputation to do so. The reader doesn't really care if you invented a recipe in your book, as long as it works for them. But I think that many of them will remember when credit is not given to the creator of that recipe. Don't you think that's, I think, very eloquent and to the point? So with that, we want to welcome the creator of the wet biscuit recipe, Shirley O'Corrier. She's a cookbook award-winning author, a recipe problem solver, a teacher, a lecturer who keeps listeners and audiences on the edges of their seats with her lively animations on everything that can go wrong in the kitchen. And she's speaking with us from Atlanta. Hi, Shirley.
Hello there.
It's Steve and John Ash.
Yes, yes, Steve and John. And John, I admire your teaching and feel a kindred soul.
Yes, yeah, it's fun, isn't it? When you see the light go on over some students' heads, it's like, oh, that's how you do that.
Right.
Well, Shirley, let's get right to the heart of the matter. Prior to 1998, nobody had heard of a wet biscuit. I had never, and I'd made dozens of biscuits and lots of recipes over the 25 years or so. So where did the idea come from for the wet biscuit dough? When and where did you first learn about this?
These are my grandmother's biscuits. I just adored her, and I followed her around all the time. And she was very busy because she had all my uncles and aunt and grandfather to feed three meals a day. And she made biscuits three meals a day and cornbread twice a day. And I would use her bowl, her flour, her shortening, her buttermilk. And I thought I was doing everything just like she did. But mine would come out a dry mess and not these feather-like moist biscuits that my grandmother made. And I would cry and say, Daddy, what did I do wrong? And she would say, honey, give me a big hug, because she was very busy. I guess you forgot to add a touch of grace. So I've named them Touch of Grace Biscuits. And now, it took me years to figure out what I was missing, but I would go over in my mind watching her do it, and I suddenly remembered that she had a wet, sticky dough. See, she had an oblong wooden bread bowl, and the biscuit dough was a wet, wet mess in the back of the bowl. And then she'd dry her hands off, take a handful of flour from the other end of the bowl, sprinkle it on the biscuits, pinch off a biscuit-sized thing of wet dough, dip it in the flour, and see, what she'd done, she coated that wet dough with flour so she could handle it. And then she would shape it into a round, and actually she was more shaking off the excess flour than shaping, and she would put it in a little round biscuit pan and squish them right up against each other so that when they got in that hot oven, and you want to use a hot oven, the steam created from all that wet buttermilk would make those biscuits rise straight up, and since they're packed against each other, they wouldn't flatten out. They would just shoot way up and become so moist and tender. They're just heavenly.
And this recipe appeared in your Cookwise cookbook from 1998, and then the other book, Bakewise, from 2008, similar, but a few little improvements in there.
But I had been teaching these wet biscuits for years. And see, now the buttermilk, our cow, Liza Jane, was a Jersey cow, and her milk was very rich. So ordinary buttermilk wasn't nearly as rich, and so that's why I had to add the cream.
I have the original recipe that you started teaching back in 1976, Shirley Corrier's Touch of Grace Biscuit. So this recipe has been around for almost 40-plus years. Until you published it in 98, though, it wasn't really circulated. And so anywhere you see a wet biscuit dough, you'll know who originated that, and that's Shirley O'Corrier. And this recipe is also, you know, all over the Internet. The Chronicle wrote a piece about it back in 98. You know that this has been written about hundreds of times in newspapers all over the country. That's the Touch of Grace Biscuits. So thank you for writing that and we love making these biscuits. Now, you also sent us, you sent me a wonderful recipe yesterday, and John Ash and I are nibbling on some of the most delicious crackers right now. What is this recipe that we're nibbling on, Shirley?
They're firecrackers.
Firecrackers.
Roosters, famous firecrackers from Roosters Gourmet Cookware Shop in South Carolina, or maybe North Carolina. I forget. I've got it on the head of the recipe.
It's North Carolina.
North Carolina, yeah. Anyhow, what happens, see, for years I've solved problems for people, and anyhow, what happens, you put these cheese-covered crackers, just plain old saltines, and low-fat saltines are the best, or fat-free saltine, and you cover them, sprinkle a few hot pepper flakes on each cracker, cover them with grated cheese, and put them in a 475-degree oven. Now, see, that's outrageous. You don't put cheese in an oven that hot. The cheese actually melts, comes apart. The fat comes out of the cheese and goes into the crackers. And then you leave it in there, closed in that oven for several hours, and like to dry out. But what has happened is the fat from the cheese has soaked into the crackers and made them puff up and then dry out, and they become so crunchy you can't believe it, with this thin brown coating of cheese on top. And they are hard to stop eating.
I can attest to that. So the other thing that I asked Steve, I said, but there's cheese on the bottom too, and I guess that's because the cheese has melted and and gone.
Yes.
So both sides are coated, end up being coated with cheese.
Yes, yes.
They're the simplest recipe.
They're going to be in my cookbook coming up next year, kitchen-wise. I have cook-wise, bake-wise, and kitchen-wise is on the way.
Mm. Well, this is the simplest recipe in the world, and I think the bang for the buck, John, I don't know of a better bang for the buck than this. Saltine crackers on a 10 by 15-inch baking pan, and then grating super sharp cheese on top. If you want a little red pepper flakes, fine. You put it in a 475 oven, like Shirley said, for 2 minutes. Mm. 2 minutes. Turn off the oven. What I did was I left it overnight, and this morning, voila, this magical, beautiful sheet of crackers came out, and I just broke them apart, and we've been noshing on them all morning long.
We thought, this is the best Kentucky Derby snack, you know, that I can think of.
Another one.
Right.
And another one that you told us about, which I'm got flagged in Bakewise, are Chess Tarts. Chess Tarts.
Yeah.
These are beautiful.
Yeah. Yes. You use the little phyllo shells that you buy from the freezer section of your store, the little mini phyllo shells. They're like 2 bites worth. And you dip those in melted butter and then dry them out to crisp them. And then you fill them with a chess pie mixture, a southern sweet mixture of eggs, sugar, salt, a little cornmeal, vinegar, and vanilla. And they just need to bake for about 15 to 20 minutes. And they're perfect little handheld bite-sized bites. Again, a great Derby snack.
So I have to ask you, where did the term chess pie come from?
I think it was originally a just J-U-S-T pie, see, because when you didn't have anything else to make a pie with, blueberries or apples or anything, you just made a pie out of eggs and sugar. And so this was just pie.
It's a magnificent recipe, that chess pie tartlets, and that's in your book, Bakewise. Shirley Corrier from Bakewise and Cookwise and the new Kitchenwise coming out the end of the year in the first of 2019.
So we hope you'll come out here
on
a book tour.
We hope you'll have a trip to California sometime, Shirley, so we can see you in person.
I would love to, and who knows? I get all around. I've talked from Vancouver to Miami, so maybe I'll be there, and I would love to see you guys.
Sorry we don't have more time. We know you spent a lot of time as a wild, crazy college kid coming up from the South up to the Kentucky Derby in Louisville, and yeah, I'm sure you have stories about those times, too.
Oh, yeah, sitting in the infield.
Sitting in the infield, tripping over people's coolers, just like I did.
That's right.
And
That's right.
Next time we have you on, we're going to talk about how you developed Pillsbury's frozen biscuit recipe, right?
Okay, well, I taught them how to make biscuits. Their R&D did the rest.
Okay. Have a wonderful Derby. It was wonderful reconnecting with you. It's been since 2010 since we've had you on the show, and we don't want to wait that long again. Mm-hmm. So best of luck on the new book.
Oh, thank you, and thank you for having me on. I love talking with you guys.
It's always a touch of grace with you, Shirley. Thank you so much. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Shirley O'Courier. We'll be back, and it's Kentucky Derby today, and that means only one thing.
What?
Bourbon. We'll be back after this.
Join the switch to crystal clear KSRO-FM, 103.5 Santa Rosa, Windsor, 94.5 Petaluma. Hear the difference.
Gravenstein Grill in Sebastopol has partnered with local farms, ranches, and wineries to bring responsibly sourced creative dishes to beautiful West Sonoma County. Gravenstein Grill's chef Simon Taki welcomes you to the grill's large garden patios, lively bar, and elegant dining room, which are the perfect setting to experience the best dining in the county. In addition to world-class food, Gravenstein Grill also boasts a craft cocktail bar and an extensive wine list. Gravenstein Grill has been named best in Sonoma County in the Bohemian 2019 and the best pick of the Russian River and the Sonoma coast. Gravenstein Grill is wine country cuisine at its finest, open 7 days a week for lunch and dinner. Reservations are suggested. Come by 8050 Bodega Avenue in Sebastopol or call 707-634-6142 online at gravensteingrill.com. That's gravensteingrill.com for the wine country's best dining experience. Gravenstein Grill in Sebastopol has partnered with local farms, ranches, and wineries to bring responsibly sourced creative dishes to beautiful West Sonoma County. Gravenstein Grill's chef Simon Taki welcomes you to the grill's large garden patios, lively bar, and elegant dining room, which are the perfect setting to experience the best dining in the county. In addition to world-class food, Gravenstein Grill also boasts a craft cocktail bar and an extensive wine list. Gravenstein Grill has been named best in Sonoma County in the Bohemian 2019 and the best pick of the Russian River and the Sonoma coast. Gravenstein Grill is wine country cuisine at its finest, open 7 days a week for lunch and dinner. Reservations are suggested. Come by 8050 Bodega Avenue in Sebastopol or call 707-634-6142 online at gravensteingrill.com. That's gravensteingrill.com for the wine country's best dining experience.
Join Garden Talk and the Good Food Hour for the spring open house of A Better Way Produce and Nursery, broadcasting live Saturday, May 11th from 9 to noon.
Meet owner Daniel Gibbs, botanical artist and licensed landscape contractor, and experience his family's unique farm and nursery. Check out their new beneficial insect display. Tour the grounds and see nearly 1,000 plant species, easy-to-shop sections dedicated to categories like good under oaks, good under redwoods, drought-tolerant dwarf, spring color, and more. See their small spaces demonstration gardens and their koi pond. Just in time for Mother's Day, they have beautiful hanging flower baskets. Once an hour, enter to win one. Must be present to win.
That's the spring open house of A Better Way Produce and Nursery. Live broadcast with Garden Talk and the Good Food Hour. Saturday, May 11th from 9 to noon at 3615 Stony Point Road, just north of Talk. A Better Way Produce and Nursery. Open 7 days a week, 9 to 4:30.
Hi, my name's Ken, and I own Good Start Packaging in Bedford, New Hampshire. With my Spark Cash Card from Capital One, I earn unlimited 2% cash back on all my business purchases. And last year, that added up to $36,000 in cash back. That's right, $36,000. Thanks to that, I was able to offer healthcare to my employees. The Spark Cash Card did a lot for my business. Imagine what it could do for yours. What's in your wallet?
Real Capital One customers paid for real stories. Credit approval required.
with Sonoma County's most accurate, most dependable forecast. Here's Daniel Trucios on the KSRO Weather Watch.
Cool attempts for the weekend today at 69, 56 along the coast. Partly cloudy conditions above us. Mostly cloudy tonight, low 46, 47 on the shores. Sunny for tomorrow at 65, 57 in Bodega Bay. A few clouds come back for Monday at 69, 59 on the coast. Depend on weather every 30 minutes on FM News Talk 103.5 and 94.5 KSRO.
So it is Kentucky Derby, and I'm sorry I don't have the fanfare ready to play, John. I know. I blew it here, but pretend that the horses are coming to the post. And with that, we want to raise a mint julep with our special guest today, Adam Spiegel, owner of Sonoma Distilling Company in Rohnert Park. Thanks for coming in today.
Thanks for having me.
And you have created this. This goes where no julep has gone before. I need to expand my mind to wrap my head around this. Describe your Sonoma jewel.
So to us, I mean, we wanted to make something a little different. I have a woman who works with us named Kelly Looney, and she did a great job making this internally. And our thought was, why don't we sort of make it a California-style mint julep? Mm. So I love Revive. Revive's a great kombucha locally. I can get into all sorts of detail about why I like to use kombucha in my cocktails. Wow. But, you know, we use little local honey. We did some mint. This is sort of the distiller's edition because a real full-fledged version requires a little bit of cucumber juice and all sorts of stuff, which I didn't have a chance to make this morning. But for me, I'd rather just be simple. So three ingredients. You got honey. You got ice. You've got mint. And you got bourbon. And then obviously the Revive. So maybe five ingredients.
This is a remarkable julep, by the way.
So the Revive actually adds some sparkle to
it. It adds some sparkle to it. You know, the other thing I love about Revive is, you know, for the most part, the SCOBY's eating most of the sugar. Now, of course, they add juices back into it. But what's really fun about that is it gives you a really fun sort of less sweet base to work from. And that's why I like using the local honey in here, too. So you throw a little bit of honey in there. I sort of make your mash with it on the bottom. So you take your honey, you take your mint, I take a little bit of whiskey is what I like to do. Jam the whole thing up, start unlocking all those oils. Then you throw your whiskey on, your ice, and you're pretty much done with Revive on top.
And beautiful crystal goblets, silver goblets.
Well, only fancy for you folks.
This is really wonderful.
Yeah.
It's very subtle. It doesn't hit you over the head like so many juleps do. It's very
smooth.
And
it's not so sweet. Which is the other part of it. Sometimes they get just...
Yeah, I mean, like that's always been my pet peeve, too. I hate when you have cocktails that just have too much flair, too much stuff. Mm. You know, if you're using a good base, we like to think we make good whiskey. You know, the reality is you don't need a lot of stuff.
So tell us about whiskey and how you got started.
So I was sort of a fallout of the 2008 financial crisis. I lost my job with a lot of other people in the United States and around the world. And I sort of realized I wanted to learn how to do something, want to make something with my hands. So in 2008, started making beer, then turned into wine. Wine turned into grappa turned into whiskey. And next thing you knew, we were sort of, myself and a former business partner, were sort of making some stuff at home that we thought was pretty good. 2008, 2009, we went live in 2010. Back then, there was 200 distilleries in the United States. Now there's about 1,800, so 9.5 years later. And then there was 15. We were the 15th distillery in California. Now there's about 108. So the whole marketplace is kind of built around us, which has been great. But for us, we're really narrowly focused on making whiskey.
And you're located in Rohnert Park.
That's correct. And we've been there the whole time.
Yeah, and you have a tasting room there?
So we have a tasting room reopening in June. We've gone through a bit of an expansion. When I first started in 2010, we were roughly about 784 square feet. 784 square feet from 2010 to 2013. 2013 to 2018, we were 6,000 square feet. Mm. And now we're at 12,000 square feet with a 9,000 square foot barrel room we're building. So we've grown up, which is great. And so the new tasting room will be on site. You can see the facility, tour, taste it. It's going to be really fun.
So the secret of whiskey is aging, isn't it, in wood?
That is true.
The contribution that wood makes.
That's definitely part of it, for sure.
And what kind of wood do you use, or does it matter?
It does matter. So American oak, charred American oak has always been the sort of American whiskey style. There's sort of two divergent sort of ideas about different equipment you can use. We use pot stills, traditional Scottish-style pot stills. So sort of the equivalent of making something in a pressure cooker versus making something on a copper pan.
The pot stills are they look like something from Jules Verne.
And they're gorgeous. Yeah, I mean, yeah. And they're are all handmade. Yeah. They're handcrafted.
Where did you get yours from?
So my new one just came in from Scotland. So I got one from Speyside, Scotland. It's a 3,000 gallon still. And I have four 250 gallon stills that were all handmade in Spain.
Mm. And you also do your own smoking?
Yes. Inside? Yeah. So we like to control a lot of the processes, not everything. I brought you some of my cherrywood smoked barley, which we actually smoke on hand ourselves. So we have an old 40-foot shipping container that we turn into a one-ton smoker. On site too, you know, we distill, we cook our own mashes, we create whiskey from scratch rather than buying barrels from Kentucky or Tennessee or anywhere else. And that's really fun because, again, it gives us a really California signature using water and local ingredients.
So can I ask you that the smoked barley has such an amazing aroma to it.
Yeah.
Is that traditional?
No. That was sort of a nuance that we wanted to bring to whiskey a little bit. We used to buy it from a company called Breese, and then about 4 or 5 years ago, we said, why don't we just make it ourselves? So we had a friend of ours down in Petaluma help us sort of figure out the nuts and bolts of it. And it's just a low smoke. It's 90 degrees or less for roughly about 40 to 50 hours. The grains are already fully malted. And what that does is it lets the smoke sort of marry with the malted barley. And then you put that into your mash. Create your whiskey from fully fermented out, and that smoky flavor is captured through the whole process.
It's really remarkable. Yeah. Although people say, of course, the barrels are the key. Old-time distillers will tell you it's not so much the barrel as where the barrel ages, the structure itself.
That's really important. And what's really nice about Sonoma County, which most people don't realize, is that Sonoma County is perfect for making whiskey. It's hot and cold and hot and cold. So that's really great for the expansion and contraction of the distillate and the wood. So what we also have access to local water and the fact that our temperature climates are affected by the fog. I mean, we have so many things here that make us uniquely Californian. Mm-hmm. And I think that's really great to bring to whiskey because obviously most people think of Kentucky or Tennessee, and we can do something different here.
So why has whiskey and spirits in general, why do you think it's taken off in the way that it has?
I think whiskey is a very storied thing. There's a lot of history and nostalgia about whiskey. And so for us, I think what's so fun is to bring something new to whiskey, though we're using old equipment. Cherrywood smoked barley, you know, in my rye, my cherrywood rye, my cherrywood smoked bourbon. I think those things just let people sort of say, oh, whiskey's versatile. Oh, I can pair it with food. Mm-hmm. Or I can do something different like this Sonoma Jewel. I mean, for us, I think trying to breaking the confines that whiskey finds itself today and saying, let's pair this with food. You know, we do a black truffle rye, for example, once a year, like stuff like that. You know, that lets you think outside the box. You know, that's sort of been reserved for wine and to a certain extent beer. Mm-hmm. And I think whiskey is just as versatile. And, you know, that also allows the chefs, that allows the bartenders, let them all get really creative.
And the structure that you're going to age these bourbons in, did you build what they call a rickhouse?
Yeah, so it's not a traditional rickhouse in the sense that it's not obviously made out of wood, so it doesn't rick as much, creak. But we are building a metal structure. It's going to be 25 feet tall. Mm-hmm. You know, we obviously have certain issues that other people in other states don't. We have earthquakes, kind of a big one.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I don't want to put an elephant on stilts. You know, if you have, you know, hundreds of tons of stuff floating in the air, that's sort of scary. But for us, you know, we want to make something different and do it here, right there in Rona Park.
And are you going to just offer this Sonoma Jewel, this julep riff at the tasting room?
Yeah, so we're figuring out our new tasting experience. I think it's going to be a combination of things. I think it's going to be a tasting. It's going to be a little bit of cocktails. We'll do a little bit of both.
Maybe have this on tap? You
said, that'd be really fun. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we have a kombucha on tap already. We're really blessed to have a guy locally who actually makes us our own kombuchas. He makes us some shrubs on site, too. So we can just really take it right out of there, out of the tap, and make it a really nice, fun, sort of summery cocktail.
So does anybody else use kombucha?
I don't know. I mean, to be fair, I don't know anybody else's programs as much as my own. I will say that, again, I think the kombucha side, initially I was actually hesitant to it. I talked to the Revive folks, you know, 4, 5, 6 years ago. And initially I told them, I'm sorry, I'm not interested, because I always thought about the health benefits of kombucha. Mm-hmm. And then I realized, I'm like, well, someone's going to go out there and just blend it with ginger beer or Coca-Cola or whatever. I'd rather they do it with something that, you know, either uses organic ingredients, less sugar. Mm-hmm. So why not?
We're going to take a break, and when we come back, what will we taste next?
I think we're going to try the cherrywood smoked bourbon.
Okay.
And then I also brought you a little sample of my black truffle rye, which is still sort of coming together, but it's a nice little sneak peek of what's coming out.
You know, Adam Spiegel from Sonoma Distilling Company, we were lucky to get him on Derby Day This is great. Are you going to a derby party this afternoon?
I am. It's also my birthday weekend, too. Oh. So it sort of coincides with all these things all at once.
A great writer once wrote, and I can't remember who it was, civilization begins with distillation. Mm. Don't you love that quote?
I do.
Chef John Ash and Steve Garner in the KSRO Rick House today.
Sonoma County's local news, weather, and traffic station, FM News Talk, KSRO, 103.5, 94.5.
Come to the Santa Rosa Original Certified Farmers Market, voted best farmers market. Find a wide selection of garden starts, savor farm fresh eggs and produce like fresh strawberries, avocados, and asparagus. Enjoy farm-to-table almonds, walnuts, and healthy salad greens. Discover quality beef, pork, fresh seafood, and freshly made sausages. Multiple food vendors are serving up an excellent breakfast and lunch using farm fresh products. Minhee's Korean Cuisine, The Green Grocer, Mi Fiesta's Fresh Tamales, and a whole lot more. Santa Rosa's original farmers market at the Luther Burbank Center for the Arts is open year-round Wednesdays and Saturdays, 8:30 a.m. to 1 p.m. Thank you, Sonoma County, for voting them number one. The Santa Rosa Original Certified Farmers Market, where it's always fresh, local, and fun.
Hey, it's George Adair with Cross Country Mortgage. That's right, my team and I have partnered with Cross Country Mortgage to deliver fast closings, great interest rates, and the largest selection of loan programs available. Did you know that nearly half of all Sonoma County real estate purchases are made with all cash? That's tough for the other half to compete with, but not for our clients. With Cross Country's Fast Track pre-approval, our buyers can close in as little as 10 days and with no loan contingency. In some cases, we can even waive an appraisal. Worried about rising interest rates? That's okay, because Cross Country's unique lock-and-shop program lets our pre-approved buyers lock in today's rate while they search for their perfect home. If you're ready to buy or refinance, visit georgeadair.com or call me at 583-8100. Again, go to georgeadair.com or call 583-8100 to begin a great lending experience.
Cross Country Mortgage, NMLS ID 2039, and George Adair, NMLS ID 245370. Equal housing lender, subject to credit approval.
Sonoma County has become smarter by cutting down on waste, and that includes electronic devices. It's not only good for the planet, it's illegal to dispose of many electronic devices in your trash can. Toxic materials from your TV, laptop, cell phones, and similar devices contaminate the earth when they break down.
Fortunately, Zero Waste Sonoma, in partnership with the Conservation Corps North Bay, holds free e-waste collection events in your community. You can drive up, drop off, and drive on.
The next free event is this Friday, Saturday, and Sunday at the Healdsburg Community Center from 9 a.m. to 5 p.m.
To see a list of acceptable electronic waste and to learn more about recycling programs in your area, visit ZeroWasteSonoma.gov. Then bring your unwanted or broken electronic devices for recycling.
Dispose of your electronics this weekend at the free recycling event at the Healdsburg Community Center, 1557 Healdsburg Avenue. Join us as we strive for zero waste in Sonoma County.
I want to be an aerospace engineer.
Do you know that the fastest growing careers require STEM skills? And yet women make up only 25% of the STEM workforce.
I want to engineer robots.
I want to be an architect.
Too many girls and young women find themselves discouraged from pursuing science, technology, engineering, and math. Community-wise, Women Investing in STEM Equity is an initiative working to support the aspirations of young women interested in STEM training and careers.
Hi, I'm Jessica Sherry, the CEO at Golden State Lumber in the North Bay. I'd like to see more girls graduate with STEM degrees. At Golden State Lumber, science, technology, engineering, and math are the backbone of our business. We are proud to support this collaboration to provide career opportunities and build a strong workforce in our industry.
Girls in STEM, brought to you by Golden State Lumber in partnership with CTE Foundation's Community Wise. Visit CTESonomaCounty.org and click the STEM resources page for programs and resources.
Win a Toyota Tacoma, cash, and more this month at Grayton. Play to enter the Tacomas in Cash giveaway on May 31st. Plus, Multiplier Wednesdays, get up to 7 times the points. Thursdays, turn points into slot play and win up to 10,000 cash in the wild winning slot tournaments. Sign up for Grayton Rewards and get up to $500 in free play. Learn more at GraytonResortCasino.com. Complete rules available at the Reward Center.
KSRO, AM, FM, and online. Depend on it.
We're celebrating Kentucky Derby today. Chef John Ash, Steve Garner in the KSRO Rick House, where we're inhaling the wonderful, wonderful fumes of aged bourbon with master distiller Adam Spiegel from Sonoma Distilling Company in Rohnert Park, California. And this tasting room will be reopening in June. Make sure you go by and taste some of his wonderful selections. What's up next in the tasting, Adam?
So I wanted to pour you our Cherrywood Smoke Bourbon. The reason is because, again, we smoke our own barley on site. We use California cherry trees that we actually dry age ourselves for about 6 months. So it's really fun to be able to bring this sort of local element in there. And when you smoke it with cherry trees, you actually get this beautiful, salty, briny, minerally backbone on there. It does deliver some smoke, which is great. So,
but it's not all smoked. I've had some smoked whiskeys, which I've not cared for because it's just like having a piece of charcoal in your mouth.
I appreciate you saying that. That's always been my sort of pet peeve too. I mean, I think anything you make needs to be balanced, just like a good meal, just like a good whiskey. You know, you need to have everything on the table that seems to sort of balance one another.
So you do the Cherrywood bourbon and a rye? Both.
That's correct. The Cherrywood rye comes out typically every spring. We have a new batch coming out soon. So when the new tasting room's open, it's going to be a great time to come by that. And then the Cherrywood smoked bourbon comes out typically every fall. It's a really good sort of holiday spirit. Mm-hmm. Think of, you know, jammy, figgy, you know, bread puddings. Think of Christmas and Thanksgiving.
Have you used other woods for the smoking, or is cherry obviously is your choice?
At the moment, it is. I've certainly played around with some other smokes that I have not yet released publicly. I think doing that is great. You know, we haven't messed with peat, which is what most people think of, and I've avoided that. It's a moss. You know, it doesn't typically grow a ton in this area, though there is some local peat reserves. So I just want to do something that sort of feels authentic to this area, and maraschino and cherry is so present in cocktails anyway.
Manhattan's exploding.
Exactly. For me, it's like, you know, if I can put it in the glass already, it just avoids one step, avoids one sugar, you know what I'm saying? Like one more ingredient out, you already got it in there.
So off the air, we were talking during the break about the aging, and I think my conception of this is, well, you put it in the barrel and you leave it in there for 25 years or something like that. And I guess some people do that, but you don't. And you made an interesting comment about finding balance between the aging of these things and the effect of the wood.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think anything like a good meal, like a good whiskey, like a good beer needs to be balanced. And if you're, you know, just, you know, if you have too much oak tannin or too little oak tannin, it sort of skews the palate in the wrong direction. And so, you know, I worked with a cognac maker locally named Hubert Germain Rabon, and he started up an amazing brandy style distillery up in Mendocino. And one of the things we talked about was a lot of American spirits just taste too oaky. It tastes like you're chewing on driftwood, and you just you sort of lose the nuance and the essence of the underlying grain. So what the challenge is, just like making a rye whiskey or making a truffle rye, is to make sure that something doesn't taste either too oaky, too vanilla forward, too spicy, but has that nice balance in there. And with the truffle, it adds a whole other ingredient in there too, because you're worried about umami and seaweedy and doesn't get too much fungus forward. And so I'm always constantly trying to figure out what that balance is. And I think 9.5 years in, I think we sort of figure that out.
So the cherry wood is fantastic.
Thank you.
Now I'm cleansing my palate with the Sonoma Julep. With the julep, all right?
I'm glad to hear that. Please. And again, you know, that to me, you know, our bourbons are a sort of a California style. They're not overtly sweet like a lot of ones in the market. And it's a good way, little liaison too. Like a lot of times people love smoky scotches. I say, why don't you try my cherry wood smoked bourbon? If you love that chewability of the smoke, you still get it. It just doesn't have peat.
Trying to capture the almost unattainable essence of a Perrigord black truffle, the elusiveness of that, to keep this in a bottle of bourbon, how are you accomplishing that?
It's still difficult, and it's something that we're really obviously going to be continuing for the rest of my life, ideally, trying to figure out. You know, the Perrigord itself was introduced to us through a friend of ours, a friend of the distilleries up in Healdsburg, and she was a bartender, and she had a really great bar program. And I told her I like to cook with my rye whiskey, and she says, well, what do you like to do with it? I say, I pour it with my mushrooms and do a flambe, because I love how the interaction of the mushroom, the fungus, does with the rye. She says, oh, 1 second, ran to the kitchen, grabbed a sliver of truffle from the Madrona Manor kitchen, threw it into the rye whiskey and said, let's see what happens. 2 weeks later, we were like, oh my God, this is amazing. So Pam, love you, Pam, amazing. Pam Bushing, she did a great thing. So on the back, it says, thank you, Pam. Mm-hmm. Every bottle says, thank you, Pam, because she was a sort of the genius that put these things together. And again, it's my way of merging the food world, the whiskey world, letting everything sort of sit on the table together.
So, but isn't the issue with truffle is it's so volatile. And you can lose it.
Yes.
Once you open the bottle, does it go away?
It can, and that's always been sort of the balance. And so what I'm sort of trying to figure out is the balance of either over-truffling it, because I think I have concern about over-truffling it just like anything else, but also not under-truffling it and then having a truffle dissipate with a little oxidization. So I think we've dialed it in now. We have a new batch coming out in September of this year, September, October, available in our tasting room as well and out to the general public. And think about that with a good turkey meal or a good
something. I have to ask you, what do you do with the truffle? And you use real truffle, not the
real French
paracord, not the chemical one.
It'd be cheaper to do it the other way, trust me, rather than flying them in.
When you strain them out, what do you do with them?
So by then, there's really nothing left. It's almost like cardboard. I mean, they've given me everything they got, and we let them infuse for 6-7 months. There's a long infusion process just to make sure, and we proof down with them in there still. It's a very sort of intricate involvement. So with all due respect to that, I would love to do something because I love them myself. I would be sitting on, you know, tens of whatever, tons of pounds of them. It'd be amazing. So the answer so far is nothing, but I'm open to suggestions. I've thought about making salt or oil.
Do you have some ideas?
Yeah.
Oh, you know, talk to him afterwards.
We get to some samples.
Well, salt, sugar, you know, all of that kind of stuff.
All the above sounds good to me. Yeah.
So I'm sure this is a big demand product, this black truffle bourbon. It probably sells pretty quickly.
It does. You know, we sold it 2 years ago, sold out in about a month. You know, there were some straggler bottles out in the public that sort of got resold and all of the above. But I think it's just because it's different. I think it's because it allows people, especially on the high-end side, to pair that with a good, you know, blue cheese chop salad or a little local honey or, I mean, to me, that's a really good way to tie in a good meal. If you're spending money on a good meal, why would you not whiskey?
So where can people get these, buy these?
So locally, we've got some great partners at Willoughby's and Bottle Barn. You know, we can go to Oliver's. Those folks have always been great buyers of ours. And then obviously there's some BevMo's in the area that have got us from time to time too. If they're in the city, you got Cask and D&M Liquors and sort of those sort of iconic K&L wines. And there's some national shippers too. So if you type in Sonoma Rye Whiskey, you type in Sonoma Bourbon, there's plenty of ways for people to purchase it around the country. But we're only in 5 states of distribution today. We do a lot of sales overseas too, so I go to London once or twice a year to sort of help.
I would think the Japanese would go absolutely nuts
over
this.
And we haven't even started. So excited to get out there. It's a very story to talk about, like an iconic whiskey market.
Yeah.
When you get there, you got to do it right. So I'm sort of gearing up for that. I think I'll earn my keep there, hopefully in a couple of years.
Well, you'll be competing with the best in the world.
And I love that.
In the Japanese market.
Well, I love highballs too. I mean, I can drink a highball all day long. I mean, talk about actually going back to the original. I mean, talk about very low ingredients.
Is that
I
your
mean,
favorite cocktail?
I think it is, minus something like we're drinking now, but I would say that a highball is the most simplistic because it really brings out the nuance and the flavor of the whiskey underneath it.
So how do you make a highball?
So for me at home, especially if I've ever been doing a long day of shows or tastings, I don't want to go into beer. And so what I do is I get really nice bubbly water. I pour myself an ounce or two of whiskey in the bottom of a glass, put some ice on top of that, ideally bigger ice cubes when possible, unless you're going to sit there and chisel the ice. And then you pour your really bubbly water on top. You're done. That's it. Simple, easy. Stir with a chopstick. Call it a day.
We're down to the last minute or so. We want to remind folks that it's Adam Spiegel, the distillation master at Sonoma Distilling Company in Rohnert Park, California. The tasting room will reopen in June, and you can taste how many will you have to taste at the tasting
room? So by California law, we can pour 5 quarter-ounce pours a day, so our plan is to go ahead and do that.
And which ones will you have?
The Sonoma Rye, Sonoma Bourbon, Cherrywood Rye. We also make a wheat whiskey every once in a while as well, and so that should be fun to release.
I'm a big fan of wheat whiskeys.
Oh, me too. I mean, they're not the highest, you know, selling ones, but I think the flavor you get from wheat is incredibly fun.
I agree. Well, thanks for bringing in the Sonoma Jewel.
These are great.
We couldn't have asked for a better mint julep celebration,
fantastic.
And a more unorthodox one with kombucha.
Well, we're Californians, you know. We're doing a little different.
This is really great. Thanks for listening, everybody. Next week is going to be fun. We're going to be at a Better Way Produce and Nursery, and we will be welcoming Doug and Tony from East Wind Bakery down on Sebastopol Road. They do pastries like nobody else anywhere in Northern California has. They'll be bringing in a selection for our guests at the remote to taste. And also Jorge Alcazar will be joining us the second part of the Good Food Hour from the wonderful ice cream emporium.
Yeah, Frozen Art.
Frozen Art on Sebastopol Road. He's going to be bringing in about 100 fresh frozen fruit popsicles, tiny ones, to taste next Saturday. Yeah. So it should be a lot of fun. We hope our listeners will come out and support us at this live broadcast.
Yeah, free food.
Free food. Coming up next, it's Clark Wolf at the table. I'm Steve Garner. Thanks for listening. Have a safe and sane Cinco de Mayo and a July 4th today, and we'll talk again next week. High noon at KSRO Santa Rosa.